All right, I think we're wow. Do we have a drink? That's the important part.
I did actually. I did pour a drink.
Okay.
One thing I remembered how to do on this
You've only been doing that for a decade, so.
podcast.
Whiskey, whiskey.
Yes, I do have something. You know what I wish there was for this? This it would be like, you know those like on TikTok you can do like the age filter. Like it would be hilarious if you were like, "Welcome to the 3000th show," and like we look like gray-haired and like with like wrinkles everywhere. I think that would be hilarious. I'd like a filter that makes me look like a potato. You know that
I mean, maybe some barley instead of a potato. We don't want to be pro vodka here. Let's see if that's
That hasn't changed.
Whiskey, whiskey, the singer's getting sore. We raise the roof now, we're lowering the floor. The band is blistered, but we got a little more. When I say one, two, you say three, four. One, two, three, four.
Welcome to the Whiskey Topic. My name is Mark Bylock, and I'm here with Jamie Johnson. Jamie, welcome.
Hello! So
I
excited.
know. Okay, but look, okay, so we're on episode 401. Last week was our 400th episode. We did the dumbest thing we could have. Our listeners were right. I want to say that.
They're always right. They were
I
totally
know.
right about that, though. They were right about it. Yep.
Like, when we did the high altitude whiskey tasting in the mountains, they were like, okay, that's interesting. When we went in a submarine and did that whiskey tasting under higher pressure, they were like, okay, this is fun. But the skydiving, they were right. When you're falling out of the plane, the act of pouring the whiskey and the wind and the pressure change in the glass, it just didn't work.
It wasn't our best, but
No.
I'm willing to try it again and take more suggestions for what kind of adventure tastings we should do next, because this is an adventure tasting whiskey podcast, right? So why wouldn't we?
You know what, Jamie? I don't actually know what the episode number this is.
Me either. Is it over 100? Have we done over 100?
Okay, we've done a this is 162. Our last
That's
podcast,
impressive. All right.
was December 2020. We had Dr. Don on. I think that was
Oh,
me because I went to thing. Yeah, there you
right.
go.
That's right. And I'll tell you something though. So this is when 167?
162.
162. Okay. Yeah. So I have been to so many whiskey shows where people are still asking. They're like, "What is going on with you and Mark? Why haven't you done any podcasts?" And it's like, life, babes. That's all I can say is it hasn't always been easy to get everyone's schedule together. For those of you who have stuck around, welcome back.
It's pretty exciting. We've got a theme. We've done heavy research for this. I think Jamie,
As
you and I,
always.
as we had a whole billboard. We did the whole episode mapping and everything else. And we're going to make this episode about the things, because we've been doing this podcast since 2015, 2014, something like
Oh my
that.
God.
I know. Oh my God, it's fun. So we're going to do what we've been right about and what we've been wrong about. Because we've been doing this podcast, we've had theories. We have had theories along the way about whiskey.
We have. And some of it, I think we've been spot on. And some of it, I think we were completely, absolutely wrong. Like just the whole way through.
I may start. Okay, if I can start. Yeah, that's a
Do it.
I'm drinking George T. Stagg, 64.6%. So this
Yep.
is the
Oh.
I can't even
Oh.
think. But this is interesting because I've had this bottle for 7 years, and I had it down to about here to heel to for the whiskey heel party where we
Yeah.
pour the last of our whiskeys. But the last whiskey heel party happened in 2019.
Yes.
And in 2019 was the year I drank this down, like I'm saving this for the heel party. And so 2020 never happened. The heel party never
Yeah.
happened in 2021, never happened in 2022. Possibly will happen this year. We'll see. So early on, I think in this podcast, you and I have had a bunch of theories. One of them had to do with glassware and how that affects whiskey. Another thing that a theory I had is as you drink down the whiskey, it changes a little bit. And I think we were ahead of Reddit on this. Like I looked this up. Like I wrote an article about this in 2016. So,
Oh, wow.
and the question I have for you is, did I discover something or did I influence what how people talk about this? Because so early on, it was so early on. So one of the thing was that we would always say, you and I think both said this on the podcast, is like when we drank a whiskey and we drank the neck pour, we didn't judge the whiskey based on that. We're like,
Correct.
okay. I didn't call it a neck pour. Now it's being called neck pour.
Oh,
10 years
somebody
later.
gave it like an official like
Okay. Yeah. So they're giving it. They call it, because I was reading this Reddit thread and there's a couple of people like, oh, I'm drinking your favorite whiskey, but I don't like it. And the guy's, bro, was it a neck pour? Because you can't trust a neck pour. I'm like, okay. So I feel a little bad about that one. But like the whole idea being is, you know, the whiskey just needs to breathe a little. It's not necessarily right. about the neck. You just, or just let it rest in the glass for a little bit longer. It needs to breathe. It needs to breathe a little bit.
Right.
And the other part of it was, oh, if you drink it through and you leave it around for a long time, I think you and I both said it's just drink your whiskey.
Yeah, I believe that what you said was when it gets to halfway done, just finish it.
Just finish it. Don't save it. Don't save it. Don't save it for your 30th wedding anniversary. It's just don't do it. Just for your 15 years into your wedding, just drink it. Pick something else.
Yeah. Did you still stand by that?
I do. I do. I do still stand by it as I drink this high proof stag, which I think for me, it's still the same where it tastes a little more flat. Nothing about 60% alcohol whiskey tastes flat. So this is not the case here, but I still stand by it. I think it changes the flavor profile a little bit, not a lot. And I think the essence of the whiskey is still there. And I think, and I've written about this and I think largely accepted now is that it's not oxidation. It's not anything else. Like I think, because we've talked about it, every distillery I'd go to be like, hey, you know, and they're like, you're wrong, Mark. You're just wrong. You're wrong. But I think eventually we're like, okay, it's not oxidation because oxidation happens in the barrel for so long. And it's by the time it's just, that's a long process. But the fusion, how there's a lot of vapors in the bottle. And so over a period of time, and we've always said, just if it gets past this point, just drink it, enjoy it. Don't save it forever. Buy another whiskey. Yeah. Just don't.
Yes. And I think that's something, if you're having a celebratory bottle and you're saving it for a certain occasion, feel free to, it's funny. Sometimes I give people samples or give people bottles. Not everybody. So don't come asking me for bottles. But
I heard it. It's not everybody.
And they said, well, I'm not gonna share this with anyone. And I was like, it's gonna take you forever to finish that bottle on your own. So the best thing to do, and I still stand by this, and this is something that hasn't changed for me, is that whiskey is best enjoyed in the company of others and for celebration purposes and to share.
Yeah.
And I think that's been consistent and through like my friendships and through my career, it's there to be shared. So don't be stingy with your celebration bottles. Let people enjoy. Like, it's shocking whenever I hear somebody say like, oh, I'm not letting this one go. And it's like, drink it. Enjoy it. That hasn't changed.
Yeah. I think the only counter argument I've ever heard to that, which I liked, was somebody would say, well, I see my dad once a year and this is the bottle to share. And it's, okay, that's adorable. Different and it's adorable. Like, it transcends the whiskey and into that. Now it's a very, you know, but.
Yes. Yeah. And to be fair, if you are doing it for more of an occasion rather than to taste the whiskey with your friends, then that's something very different. And I think of the same thing with like glassware as well. I think we can all, as whiskey aficionados, can get up our own asses. Oh no, did I just make this explicit?
I mean,
anyways.
Yeah, whatever.
It's that hasn't changed. about like glassware. And I think, you know, what I think has changed for me is being a little bit more understanding of context and how people drink whiskeys in different contexts and why they drink whiskey. So if you're at, you know, a party or if you're at an event or something and somebody offers you a neat pour in a rocks glass, like, it's fine.
Yeah.
Just, it's okay. We don't have to be perfection every time. And sometimes the point of the evening is not to taste whiskey. It's to be with friends. It's to drink cocktails or whatever. But yeah, so I think that's that. I just take a step back now and say, what is the context here? If you served me a neat pour and a rocks glass before, I'd be like, they don't know what they're doing. And now I'm like, bring on the rocks glass.
Yeah.
Want to add some cubes to it? Let's go nuts, everyone. Do your thing.
I would agree. I think that's, my opinion has changed a lot on that as well. I think, like, I even looked at the book. Yeah. I was pretty poo-pooing drinking whiskey on ice. And now I'm like, you know what? I was wrong about that. And I remember in the early days, I would always drink whiskey on ice and I enjoyed the way the whiskey changed in the glass. And people don't have to go beyond that. They don't have to be drinking 60% proof alcohol. In fact, they're probably better off drinking it on ice and just staying at that stage where they're enjoying the subtle changes as the ice melts versus me drinking 60% proof. You don't need that. You don't need that in life.
So. That's, listen, you're done for the day. This is it. This is, you're wrapping up. I don't have quite the belter. I have a less ABV single malt scotch. We're going Glenfiddich today.
Nice.
I picked Grand Cru because of the connotations of the celebration pour. It's finished in cuvée cask. So it's got like that sort of idea of raising a toast and like bubbles and sparkling wine and things like that. So I felt that since we were coming back, it's nice to celebrate that with a special one. So it's 23 years finished in French oak. It's beautiful.
And you've shared that with me before, and it is a lovely pour. It is absolutely wonderful.
I share, and you just proved it. I share my whiskey. Sometimes I give bottles little samples too.
But nothing.
Is there any? Yeah. Not to everybody.
Not to everybody. Do you want to go what you've been right about?
I was thinking about, oh gosh, I'm right about so many things. I had things that I was wrong about. This is going to be really difficult for me. I think we talked a lot about independent bottlers and how we were going to be seeing more independent bottlers coming through in the next couple of years. And I think that sort of has come through people doing their own store picks. Like that, when we started this, that was not a thing in Canada at all. Like we did not see store picks or whiskey club picks or like a lot of independent bottlers. And now we've got access to them like we never have before, even through the LCBO, through all the liquor boards. And liquor boards are now looking to distilleries as well to do their own bottlings. I think that we were both kind of bang on about the way that was going. Store picks, cask picks, whiskey club exclusives. And then like on the same sort of token is independent bottling. And that's really like blown up in the last couple years.
Yeah, no, that's a great point. We saw that evolutionary point where, okay, this is a big deal. And distilleries, like you said, are jumped on board. They're like, sure, does Glenfiddich do this? Because I feel like your barrels are worth a bazillion dollars.
No, we have, I think, in the past, like here and there, but we just don't have the ability. Like we're maxed out in terms of the amount of liquid that we have that we want to put out ourselves. So we don't currently offer like independent cask, private cask, or anything like that. I don't know if that will ever change, to be honest. Yeah. But I know, especially like with bourbons, it's a lot easier, obviously, to get a hold of them. They're just closer to us. It's easier to. So I've seen, obviously, like Jack Daniel's does a private selection program. Woodford does as well. So I think a bunch of them do that. And in terms of scotch, you're looking at, I think Bruichladdich does some. I'd have to take a look and see who's got the independent casks. I would imagine smaller, newer distilleries like Ballindalloch would also offer that because it's probably a nice way to offset their startup costs and everything like that. So a lot of new distilleries are offering you to buy in to their first couple casks. I feel like you've done that before.
I did it with Last Straw Distillery in Toronto.
Right.
Yeah, it's funny because you're right. It is a little less available where we are here in Canada, in Toronto, or in Ontario specifically. But it seems like anybody in the U.S., especially in your bourbon country, does barrel picks. And it's a lot of fun because you get to be very critical of very fine details. You have 3 barrels. Yeah. Actually, in a lot of cases, you have 20 barrels. And they're basically the same. And then you get to hyper-focus on which one you like most. And that seems like a lot of fun.
It's like a whiskey nerd's dream. Like, it's right up our alley. I remember the Kensington Wine Market was doing a barrel selection. And that just so happened to be in town. And it was for a bourbon, I think. And so they asked me to come in and help. And I was like, yes.
You got it.
Count me in.
Yeah. All right. So we got 2 things we were right about.
Yeah.
I'm going to go something that I was wrong about.
Okay.
Still yet to be proven entirely wrong. But I did an article a while ago where I wrote about, and we talked about this in the podcast, where I thought whiskey was going to start like peaking. And hilariously enough, I said 2020 to 2023. I drew this little chart and I'm like, because I did some maths. There was no math involved. But at the time, we were like.
Just like you did research for this.
There was no research involved. However, I did know that, for example, Ireland was easy. Because at the time, there was like 2 distilleries in Ireland. And we went from there to 20 plus, whatever it is at now, 28, 30. And I knew all the big Kentucky distilleries were just planning to or have already started massive expansions, 30% productions, 20% production increases, some cases 3 times production increases. And so my theory was that I figured out when these whiskeys would start getting old enough to sell. So whether they'd be like 4 years, 5 years, 6 years, depending on the category. And I said, all right, around 2022, 2023, you're going to have all these distilleries online. You're going to have all this extra product. There's no way demand is going to keep up to it at this point. This is the point where we're just going to get saturation. And you could argue like there are a couple examples of this, like NGP, I think, is more barrels are becoming available.
Right.
Where they went through a drought 3 or 4 or 5 years ago. You can argue that supply disruptions have also limited sales in some cases because of bottles or corks or whatever, right? And I guess we're not at 2025 yet, but it does seem like the audience and the business has just continues to grow.
So mine is absolutely almost the exact same as yours. It's an extension of yours. I really took for granted when we were first drinking whiskey together and doing the podcast, how easy it would be to get certain bottles. You used to be able to go get Blanton's like off the shelf, no problem. Or just I feel like Blanton's, I'm going to go pick up a bottle. I feel like Eagle Rare, I'm going to go pick up a bottle.
Yeah.
That has blown my mind. Like we were drinking Elmer T. Lee, like nobody's business. And I would never have thought that it would just be like, gone one day, just gone. The demand is insane.
It is. And you're right. Like we were like, Elmer Blanton's Eagle Rare. This is fine. This is just a normal whiskey
this is what we just go get on like a Friday night. You want to bring a whiskey for dinner? Just bring a Blanton's. No problem. $60.
I had a buddy that I brought Weller 107 to like several years ago. And he does that with me. Every time I come over, he pours that one bottle and we finished it. We finished the other day and I was like very sad, but also he kept it for me.
That's really cute.
I remember buying a case at the time and it was like, no problem. I didn't feel bad about it. Like today you can't even do that. But back then I was like, yeah, but there's so many and they're going to be around the store for a couple of weeks. And then the moment that really made me understand this is when I think it was 2019, went to Kentucky and went to one of the big liquor stores there. And they're like, oh no, you guys missed the big delivery. It happens on Wednesday. I'm like, oh, like that's where people line up. I'm like, oh, what are people lining up for? And they're like, usually it's Blanton's. And there's like a whole line outside the store. I'm like, people are lining up for Blanton's. And then the whole Blanton's thing took off, like Blanton's, overrated whiskey, da da da. I'm like, I get it. You're lining up for Blanton's. Like, I get it.
It's a great whiskey. But is it worth? Exactly. It was on a TV show or something. Is that what happened? Some TV show featured it. Am I right? Am I wrong?
I think Justified had it in a couple.
Okay. So it became a thing.
It became a thing, I think about when we started drinking whiskey. I remember the older community that had been there longer than we have was like, whiskey's overrated. You got no age statement whiskey coming out. These NAS whiskeys, they're terrible. Blah, blah, blah. I used to pay $33 for this. Now it's $78. And I'm like, wow, I think we are now the generation that's doing that. Wow.
We're in that.
If somebody's coming in, it's Blanton's. I can line up for it and I can get it now because they never lived through the period where Blanton's was just everywhere.
It was there for you.
Yeah, yeah.
It was like an embarrassment of riches when I think back on it. Or you could just walk into an LCBO and find any bourbon that you wanted. And Blanton's was just there. I don't even know if I have any bottles. I know I have one bottle of Elmer T. Lee. I found that in a random liquor store in Lake Placid, like upstate New York, years ago. And there was two bottles and we got both of them.
Yeah.
And we drank one. And then that one's just sitting there waiting for something. But it's not open. There's been no neck pour. There's volume. So we're good.
You're watching good evaporation.
Yeah. I know. Oh my God. But no, it's still there. So I don't know when we're going to open it, but I can't, when have you seen an Elmer T. Lee on the shelf? Like when have you ever, been 10 years. Like it's been not 10 years, but like probably 6 or 7, even more than that. Yeah. More
I think Elmer went early on, like I think 20.
It was one of the first. Yeah. It was one of the first to go.
Same with Willets. Remember where there's just, you just go to be, there would just be Willets everywhere in the US. Not so much here, but you can just go to any liquor store and just pick yourself up a Willet, cast strength. Why not?
I know. And remember when we were at Willet and then all of a sudden the entire like visitor center was like bombarded with people and we were like, what the hell is happening here? And they're like, oh, it's release day. And then all of a sudden we turn around and the whole thing was falling. Everyone's like, ah, and Mark's like, ah.
It was our friends Glenn and Matt that were like, ah.
I know. And then I think they had buyer's remorse afterwards. I think they were like, what have we done?
Oh yeah. But then they opened
it. Expensive. I know. It was similar to your stag. I've got this much of a Willett rye, one of those, their house ryes. The family
reserve. Yeah.
Family. Okay. Yeah. So I have one of those sitting downstairs. It's one of those ones that I just deign to finish. It's not that I just can't not have it anymore, because then I can't say something cool and nerdy like I have a Willett family rye on my shelf. I have an empty bottle of Willett. I know.
Like, I have that's none part of that. Of that. I have empty bottles I've kept of Willett. That's.
I know. It's hard to get rid of it. I know. It's so good. But I'm curious to know, for me, being in single malt scotch and being the kind of person that it's my part of my job to get people to the distillery. If anyone's going to visit the distillery in Canada, then I, especially like from trade, from anyone from the liquor industry, it's up to me to book their tours and try to get them there. It is so busy in Scotland right now. It's unprecedented. We have never seen anything like this ever before. It is so busy. It is jam packed. Every week is full. Like, you can't get on a tour. And I'm curious to know. And if anyone out there is in bourbon land, in the bourbon sort of distillery world, I'd be curious to know if it's the same there, if they're struggling with the same sort of issues as just trying to keep up. And I know that the distillery sort of piece, that piece itself is a lot of an extension of the hospitality industry. And I know it's been a pretty rough couple of years, so that's probably got something to do with it. But I would be very curious to know if distilleries in Kentucky are finding the same thing, because I'm not thinking about going back to Kentucky. So,
I have friends that went to Kentucky in 2022 and they said it was absolutely bonkers, nuts. And pulling favors just to get on tours was a difficult task. It was just not easy. And I guess that's true. That was unexpected, because you assume single Scotland especially, you could see the rise of bourbon as our podcast was going. That was easy to tell. But like,
you got it. Yep.
But Scotch didn't seem to, Scotch was always there. So you assume you had your audience. But you didn't have an audience that was willing to travel. And now you do. And now it's just.
Yes.
The tourism. There's a distillery on an island somewhere in Scotland. This is narrowing it down to 80 distilleries.
you did all that research, hey?
I know. It was a gin company. Oh, they make the gin in the fancy glass, the riveted glass. I don't know. I'll post a photo of it if I can. If I can.
Is it like Harris?
Yeah. Harris. Okay. And that's made on an island, right? They said that since the distillery started, they had a boat cruise start coming through there to visit the distillery. And there's 100 people that live on the island. This gigantic boat just and plops itself down. I assume they hand out a plank. I don't know how this works. And people just invade this little town. And they're like, what is going on? It's for the distillery. Wow. I mean, and the other sites, but.
Yep. Yeah, I believe it. So many of these distilleries have invested a lot in their visitor center and things like that. But I just don't think that they were, much like with the liquid, like anticipating this crazy boom of people wanting to visit distilleries and people wanting to go there. It's a cool, even if you're not a big whiskey drinker, it's still a cool place to go visit.
Yeah.
It's still a great conversation starter. It's still really interesting. And the reason why I loved whiskey so much is because I visited distilleries, because I was in Kentucky and I went. And that is it is very charming. It's very lovely. And I can understand it. It's just, again, I just don't think anyone was really prepared for how big it was going to be. And
not as big as Taylor Swift. Which neither of us got tickets for, I'm sad to say. You know what? I thought about this, Jamie. I thought about this. If you got Taylor Swift tickets, how many people would you actually tell?
Oh. Wait, what are you saying?
Do you have Taylor Swift? No, I don't. I promise I don't. But I was wondering about this, because if you had, for example, you got four tickets. Wouldn't you just like last minute be like, oh, I got these from a friend, and you just show up at the Taylor Swift concert with social media? I'm not saying you personally would do this. I'm just saying a lot of the people that would, like, because it'd be so much it's like winning the lottery.
I know it's true. I don't know a single person that did get tickets. I never thought about this because I didn't get tickets. I know there's a group of us, and it's a group of four that we know that we're going together. At least I hope they know that I'm going with them. If one of them gets tickets,
what about somebody breaks the pact? You never know.
I know, it's true. This could make or break friendships. Like, this is a big deal.
That's what I'm saying.
No, I know, you're absolutely right. But I don't know a single person that got a code or anything like that. So I don't know who's going to these shows, but it ain't me. But I'm hoping that because we've got more than a year to get tickets, we can make it happen. We've got time.
Yeah, we got time.
It's like next October? September. Next September.
November?
I think November?
Yeah, I think it's November.
It doesn't matter. I'd go any day.
I think for background, I think it's a Toronto story because Toronto didn't get a concert, and you had politicians and everybody saying, T Swift, give us some. Is this still T Swift? I feel so old now. Anyway, Taylor Swift, will you come to Toronto? Yep. And then so she announced six dates.
Yeah.
Or eight dates. I don't know. Whatever. And there's 31 million people applied, and nobody I know
did not win that.
I do know one person that has a ticket, and I'll tell you after the podcast. You'll lose your mind.
Oh no.
No way to get it's no access. Sorry, I interrupted.
No access. No, I think I get it. And I would try to be a good sport if there were people around me that I think I feel like we're gonna get tickets. I think it will happen. I don't envision who's going to be at the show if not us? I don't know. But I think it's going to happen for us. We have to be patient, and we will. So I'm whoever it is, I'm happy for them. I'm deeply envious, but I'm happy for them. Everybody deserves to go see this show. At least there's the movie that's coming out. I will be there. I'll dress up.
There you go. I'll sing.
Yeah. It's great. I wonder if she drinks whiskey. I feel like Taylor Swift does because she makes references to cocktails in her music. So I think she's probably drinking.
Yeah, I think it's
bit of, she talks about like old fashions and stuff.
Yeah.
I wonder what whiskey she drinks.
Oh man, could have asked anything you want. Could you? I guess that's the other question. Could you be famous enough where you can get your Pappy's and your, because you can get your Glenfiddich 50s. Yeah. I think the Glenfiddich 50 is, you can get that. But can you get your rare bourbons that are just very difficult to buy? They don't make them. They don't make enough of them. Like, I think if you were maybe an actor that drank whiskey, maybe there's like if you pushed for that. Like, if I was famous, I would be like, always be like, oh, I'm drinking my Pappy Van Winkle. This is what I drink. And maybe somebody would send me one, for example. But if you're Taylor Swift, I don't know. I don't know.
Yeah, I feel like yes. I think so. Because I think about, there are some like celebrity chefs that talked about Pappy at its height, and they always seem to have Pappy around, and either that they got in ahead of it and they just bought cases and cases of it because they have access to that kind of cash because it's for their restaurant or whatever. Or I'm sure like Anthony Bourdain, who was a little bit responsible for the Pappy Van Winkle craze, probably had access to it as well.
Yeah.
I think any brand would like take care of its people that support them for sure. It's a good move.
And the question is, if you make your own brand of gin or something, how does that work? Do you get these? You're in the industry now. Celebrity booze is.
I think it's a whole show. I think that's a whole discussion because we could just get our hands on a bunch of it.
Yeah.
Because I find it's like tequila heavy, which is fine. I don't mind talking about that. Mm-hmm. But like, it's every other day there's a new one that pops up.
So amazing. We're going to get close to wrapping up. But what are you thinking? Anything you want to brag about of being right about or being wrong about?
I think a lot of the stuff that we talked about that has stayed the same, like in terms of the things have moved along in the industry. Definitely. There are trends that are coming and going, but I think in general, like we were able to pinpoint things here and there. I think we weren't exactly prepared for how huge whiskey was going to get. I think at the time that we came out with the podcast. I think I also underestimated how many other whiskey podcasts there was going to be. And there's some great ones out there. Yeah. And I'm pals with people that have their own whiskey podcasts. And I did, you know, a whiskey festival with them for the women from Dram Fine in Edmonton. Yeah. And it was great. Yeah, they're amazing. And I think the whole idea is to welcome everyone. Yeah. One thing that I never loved about whiskey felt like the gatekeeping aspect of it. And I think that we're getting better and better at that. So I'm excited to have all those pals, and it's expanded. YouTubers, like TikTokers, like it's all out there now. But yeah, welcome to everyone. It's great. Always open doors. Always.
Yeah, I think that changed for us too. Like 100%. Like the audience has changed. The who we're talking to has changed. How we talk about whiskey has changed. It's always a progression. I think the best journeys are where you've never made a final decision. You're just constantly progressing and getting new information and just work through your journey in whiskey. So, you know, again, for me, whiskey on ice, this does not hold true for vodka. I'm sorry. I should say. however, I'll take that back. Dylan's makes a rye vodka right here in Ontario. They make a rye vodka. Okay. And they use this sort of, they basically use this refractor method to get more like rye flavor in it. And it tastes like un-oaked spicy rye. And if there was whiskey I'm drinking, I there's one I would potentially drink. I enjoyed the bottle they gave me at any rate. But that's changed too, right? Yeah. Vodka's changed as well.
Yep. It has, absolutely. I'm actually going to a vodka distillery at the end of this month. Yeah, I'll take pictures and post on Instagram, but I'll be visiting the Reykja Vodka Distillery in Reykjavik in Iceland. So I know. So I'm going to be, we'll do some content from there. It'll be very cool. Awesome. Maybe we'll change your mind.
Yeah.
Icelandic vodka, glacial waters. You never know.
But I think that's it, right? Because it's changed. So all these, whatever assumptions we've made, and the same with tequila, right? Tequila had such a bad reputation 10 years ago because people had a lot of terrible hangovers. But tequila, mezcal has been introduced, and Canadian whiskey has gone through a change too. People are like, Canadian ryes are terrible. And then the industry keeps evolving and keeps expanding.
It does.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that's great. And I welcome those sort of changes. And I welcome the people that welcome the changes as well. And I think that's another piece is we are not gatekeeping anymore. We don't all look one way. We don't allow people into our little whiskey club. Everybody's welcome. Yeah. Let's go. I like that. So that's how we keep moving forward, I think. So yeah, we're in an exciting time.
So our plans for the future. So we're in whiskey season, September. It's official whiskey season. You're going to be busy. I'm going to be busy. We're committed to recording more podcast episodes. And
we are committed.
We're committed to doing that. Love that. Yeah. Jamie, you went from Balvenie to Glenfiddich as a brand ambassador.
Yep. Yeah. And now that there's a little bit more work to do on Balvenie, I'm doing mostly Glenfiddich with a little aside, a soupçon of Balvenie on the side. So it's nice to go back and revisit the stories and the liquid. And Glenfiddich is such a crazy, amazing brand to work on. And the amount of like stories and different whiskeys that are available are amazing. So, yeah, I'm just happy to be through COVID, especially like being a brand ambassador. And I feel really grateful that I was able to make the transition really easily over to a brand that I always knew and was able to speak to. But now I get to chat about it a lot. So it's been great too. It's been whiskey season is busy, but in the very best way.
Oh, that's awesome. I love hearing that. I love hearing that. So Jamie, thank you so much. It's been so nice chatting.
Oh my gosh. It's like old times. It we is. Love it.
All right. Enjoy whiskey season. We'll talk to you in a little bit.
Likewise. We'll see you soon. All bye. Right. Bye.